Shadow paid for his own breakfast and, over Chad Mulligan's half-hearted protests, both hot chocolates. Henning's farm and home was a warehouse-sized building on the south of the town that sold everything from tractors to toys. The toys, along with the Christmas ornaments, were already on sale. The store was bustling with post-Christmas shoppers. Shadow recognized the younger of the girls who had sat in front of him on the bus. She was trailing after her parents. He waved at her and she gave him a hesitant blue rubber-banded smile. Shadow wondered idly what she'd look like in 10 years' time. Probably as beautiful as the girl at the Hennings Farm and Home checkout counter, who scanned in his purchases with a chattering handheld gun, capable, Shadow had no doubt, of ringing up a tractor if someone drove it through.
10 pairs of long underwear?
Said the girl.
Stocking up, huh?
She looked like a movie starlet. Shadow felt 14 again, and tongue-tied and foolish. He said nothing while she rang up the thermal boots, the gloves, the sweaters, and the goose-down-filled coat. He had no wish to put the credit card that Wednesday had given him to the test, not with the chief of police Mulligan standing helpfully beside him, so he paid for everything in cash. Then he took his bags into the men's restroom and came out wearing many of his purchases.
Looking good, big fellow.
At least I'm warm.
And outside, in the parking lot, although the wind burned cold on the skin of his face, the rest of him was warm enough. At Mulligan's invitation, he put his shopping bags in the back of the police car and rode in the passenger seat in the front.
So what do you do, Mr. Ainsel? Big guy like you? What's your profession? And will you be practicing it in Lakeside?
Shadow's heart began to pound, but his voice was steady.
I work for my uncle. He buys and sells stuff all over the country. I just do the heavy lifting.
Does he pay well?
I'm family. He knows I'm not going to rip him off. And I'm learning a little about the trade on the way. Until I figure out what it is I really want to do.
It was coming out of him with conviction, smooth as a snake. He knew everything about Big Mike Ainsel in that moment, and he liked Mike Ainsel. Mike Ainsel had none of the problems that Shadow had. Ainsel had never been married. Mike Ainsel had never been interrogated on a freight train by Mr. Wood and Mr. Stone. Televisions did not speak to Mike Ainsel.
You want to see Lucy's tits?
Asked a voice in his head. Mike Ainsel didn't have bad dreams or believe that there was a storm coming. He filled his shopping basket at Dave's Finest Foods, doing what he thought of as a gas station stop. Milk, eggs, bread, apples, cheese, cookies, just some food. He'd do a real one later. As Shadow moved around, Chad Mulligan said hello to people and introduced Shadow to them.
This is Mike Ainsel. He's taken the empty apartment at the old Pilsen place, up around the back.
He'd say. Shadow gave up trying to remember names. He just shook hands with people and smiled, sweating a little, uncomfortable in his insulated layers in the hot store. Chad Mulligan drove Shadow across the street to Lakeside Realty. Missy Gunther, her hair freshly set and lacquered, did not need an introduction. She knew exactly who Mike Ainsel was. Why, that nice Mr. Borson, his Uncle Emerson? Such a nice man. He'd been by, about 6-8 weeks ago now, and rented the apartment up at the old Pilsen place, and wasn't the view just to die for up there? Well, honey, just wait until the spring, and we're so lucky so many of the lakes in this part of the world go bright green from the algae in the summer. It would turn your stomach, but our lake, well, come 4th of July, you could still practically drink it. And Mr. Borson had paid for a whole year's lease in advance. And as for the Toyota 4Runner, she couldn't believe that Chad Mulligan still remembered it. And yes, she'd be delighted to get rid of it. Tell the truth, she'd pretty much resigned herself to giving it to Hinzelman as this year's clunker and just taking the tax write-off. Not that the car was a clunker, far from it, no. It was her son's car before he went to school in Green Bay. And, well, he'd painted it purple one day, and ha-ha, she certainly hoped that Mike Ainsel liked purple. That was all she had to say, and if he didn't, she wouldn't blame him. Chief of Police Mulligan excused himself near the middle of this litany.
Looks like they need me back at the office. Good meeting you, Mike.
He moved Shadow's shopping bags into the back of Missy Gunther's station wagon. Missy drove Shadow back to her place, where, in the drive, he saw an elderly SUV. The blown snow had bleached half of it to a blinding white, while the rest of it was painted the kind of drippy purple that someone would need to be very stoned very often to even begin to be able to find attractive. Still, the car started up on the first try, and the heater worked. although it took almost 10 minutes of running the engine with the heater on full before it even started to change the interior of the car from unbearably cold to merely chilly. While this was happening, Missy Gunther took Shadow into her kitchen. Excuse the mess, but the little ones just leave their toys all over after Christmas, and she just doesn't have the heart. Would he care for some leftover turkey dinner? Last year they did goose, but this year it was a big old turkey. Well, coffee then. Won't take a moment to brew a fresh pot. And Shadow took a large red toy car off a window seat and sat down while Missy Gunther asked if he had met his neighbors yet, and Shadow confessed that he hadn't. There were, he was informed, while the coffee dripped and brewed, 4 other inhabitants of his apartment building. Back when it was the Pilsen place, the Pilsens lived in the downstairs flat and rented out the upper 2 flats. Now their apartment, that was the downstairs one, and that was taken by a couple of young men, Mr. Holtz and Mr. Neiman. They actually are a couple, and when she said couple, Mr. Ainsel, heavens, we have all kinds here. More than one kind of tree in the forest, although mostly those kind of people wind up in Madison or the Twin Cities. But truth to tell, nobody here gives it a second thought. They're in Key West for the winter. They'll be back in April. He'll meet them then. The thing about Lakeside is that it's a good town. Now, next door to Mr. Ainsel, that's Marguerite Olson and her little boy, a sweet lady, sweet, sweet lady. But she's had a hard life, still sweet as pie, and she works for the Lakeside News. Not the most exciting newspaper in the world, but truth to tell, Missy Gunther thought that was probably the way most folk around here liked it. Oh, she said, and poured him coffee. She just wished that Mr. Ainsel could see the town in the summer, or late in the spring, when the lilacs and the apple and the cherry blossoms were out. She thought there was nothing like it for beauty, nothing like it anywhere in the world. Shadow gave her a $500 deposit, and he climbed up into the car and started to back it up, out of her front yard and onto the driveway proper. Missy Gunther tapped on his front window.
This is for you. I nearly forgot.
She handed him a buff envelope.
It's kind of a gag. We had them printed up a few years back. You don't have to look at it now.
He thanked her and drove cautiously back into the town. He took the road that ran around the lake. He wished he could see it in the spring or the summer or the fall. It would be very beautiful, he had no doubt of that. In 10 minutes he was home. He parked the car out on the street and walked up the outside steps to his cold apartment. He unpacked his shopping, put the food into the cupboards and the fridge, and then he opened the envelope Missy Gunther had given him. It contained a passport, blue laminated cover, and inside a proclamation that Michael Ainsel, his name handwritten in Missy Gunther's precise handwriting, was a citizen of Lakeside. There was a map of the town on the next page. The rest of it was filled with discount coupons for various local stores.
I think I may like it here.
He looked out of the icy window at the frozen lake.
If it ever warms up.
There was a bang at the front door at around 2 p.m. Shadow had been practicing the sucker vanish with a quarter, tossing it from one hand to the other undetectably. His hands were cold enough and clumsy enough that he kept dropping the coin onto the table, and the knock at the door made him drop it again. He went to the door and opened it. A moment of pure fear. The man at the door wore a black mask which covered the lower half of his face. It was the kind of mask that a bank robber might wear on TV, or a serial killer from a cheap movie might wear to scare his victims. The top of the man's head was covered by a black knit cap. Still, the man was smaller and slighter than Shadow, and he did not appear to be armed, and he wore a bright plaid coat of the kind that serial killers normally avoid.
Ewan,
said the visitor.
Huh?
The man pulled the mask downward, revealing Hinselman's cheerful face.
I said it's Hinselman. You know, I don't know what we did before they came up with these masks. Well, I do remember what we did. Thick knitted caps that went all around your face, and scarves, and you don't want to know what else. I think it's a miracle what they come up with these days. I may be an old man, but I'm not going to grumble about progress, not me.
He finished this speech by thrusting a basket at Shadow, filled high with local cheeses, bottles, jars, and several small salamis that proclaimed themselves to be venison summer sausage, and by coming inside.
Merry day after Christmas.
His nose and ears and cheeks were red as raspberries, mask or no mask.
I hear you already ate a whole one of Mabel's pasties. Brought you a few things.
That's very kind of you.
Kind? Nothing. I'm going to stick it to you next week for the raffle. The Chamber of Commerce runs it, and I run the Chamber of Commerce. Last year, we raised almost $17,000 for the children's ward of Lakeside Hospital.
Well, why don't you put me down for a ticket now?
It don't start until the day the clunker hits the ice,
said Hinzelman. He looked out of Shadow's window toward the lake.
Cold out there. Must have dropped 50 degrees last night.
It happened really fast.
We used to pray for freezes like this back in the old days. My daddy told me, when the settlers were first coming into these parts, farming people and lumber people, long before ever the mining people came out, although the mines never really happened in this county, which they could have done, for there's iron enough under there.
You'd pray for days like this?
Interrupted Shadow.
Well, yeah, it was the only way the settlers survived back then. Weren't enough food for everyone, and you couldn't just go down to Dave's and fill up your shopping trolley in the old days. No, sir. So my grandpa, he got to thinking. And when a really cold day like this come along, he'd take my grandma and the kids, my uncle and my aunt and my daddy, he was the youngest, and the serving girl and the hired man, and he'd go down with them to the creek, give them a little rum and herbs drink. It was a recipe he'd got from the old country. Then he'd pour creek water over them. Of course, they'd freeze in seconds, stiff and blue as so many popsicles. He'd haul them to a trench they'd already dug and filled with straw, and he'd stack them down there, one by one, like so much cordwood in the trench, and he'd pack straw around them. Then he'd cover the top of the trench with 2x4s to keep the critters out. In those days, there were wolves and bears and all sorts you never see anymore around here. No hodags, though. That's just a story about the hodags, and I would never stretch your credulity by telling you no stories. No, sir. He'd cover the trench with 2x4s, and the next snowfall would cover it up completely, save for the flag he'd planted to show him where the trench was. Then my grandpa would ride through the winter in comfort and never have to worry about running out of food or out of fuel. And when he saw that the true spring was coming, he'd go to the flag, and he'd dig his way down through the snow, and he'd move the 2x4s. And he'd carry them in one by one and set the family in front of the fire to thaw.